This is the July 6th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Greg Johnson. He's a TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing, here in Champaign County, Illinois. Logan Kimmel joins us from Roach Ag Marketing out of Naperville, Illinois. And Brian Split is here from agmarket.net. He's in Barrington, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find it online at willag.org, willag.org, to listen on demand anytime you'd like. Just click and play from the website. There's also a podcast tab there where you can subscribe to the podcast, or you can just put Closing Market Report or Commodity Week or the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast directly into your favorite podcast application, or search my name, Todd Gleason, and they should pop up. Let's begin with this question I'll ask of you, Brian Split. It's a technical question. How did things change in the chart for both corn and soybeans, wheat too, if you're wanting to talk about it, before and after the USDA acreage and grain stocks report, particularly the acreage report, which fundamentally changed what the supply and demand tables look like?
Yeah, so let's just start with November soybeans quickly. When we think about both corn and beans making lows in May and then rallying sharply off those lows, going into the quarterly stock and acreage report here at the end of June, we did pull back well off of those June highs. The main difference between soybeans and corn is that soybeans retraced about half of that rally, held, and then went right back up and took out that June high by a little over a dime, where the corn market into the report had retraced just over 62% of the rally. And then due to those acreage numbers, we actually went down, and coming out of this 4th of July holiday, we traded below those May lows. So that would be like the bean market being back below the $11.30 level. That was its May low. So corn and soybeans have deviated rather drastically coming into these numbers and then out of the numbers. So what we're looking for right now on corn is we have a little bit of a short-term potential double bottom. We did trade through those May lows by about a nickel. And there's been a lot of comparisons to 2013. And granted, this year, when we had that rally in June, there's about three extra days of very strong buying that we did not get in 2013. But since we've pulled off the highs, we've kind of regrouped with where we were in 2013. And I think it's just fascinating that in 2013, we came out of July 4th. It was July 5th. We made a low of $4.90 a bushel. This year, we made a low yesterday out of the 4th of July holiday at $4.85. Now, what we did in 2013, we ended up bouncing going into the July WASDE report. That high was at 5.28 1/4. And that was your last little peak that we had before eventually rolling over and trading up to 4.45 3/4 around the August WASDE report. So if we do get a good rally here over the next couple of sessions into next Wednesday's report, that may be another good short-term selling opportunity if we can get back into that 5.25 to 5.35 zone, which I think is relative to the December 23 corn chart. On November beans, we've gone down off of the most recent high that was made coming out of the weekend. We've retested the 200-day moving average this morning. We held there. We saw some buying redevelop. So as long as we're holding the 200-day, I'd like to see if maybe we could get back up and recheck that 1380 to 1390 zone. The long-term downtrend on November soybeans from the April 2022 highs to the December 2022 highs comes in around 1410. So I do have quite a few producers that have re-implemented a put strategy here in the short term, and we're going to look to be able to sell some futures or some cash bushels with a 14 in front of it if we can resume this rally.
Logan Kimmel, I know that Roach Ag Marketing had seen the classic sell signals for a period of time, I think, in May and June. What are you hearing from Roach Ag directly now about what the marketplace looks like?
Well, I think the market it gave us an opportunity on the corn, especially with the run up in price and the fund buying. Since then, we've seen a drastic pull down in new crop corn, whereas the soybeans have popped back up here due to Friday's report and given producers another opportunity here the last 3 days to make some sales and get caught up on new crop soybeans. I agree with Brian's targets. I think our outlook going forward with a little bit of a bottom forming here on Dease corn is, I think if you get up into the 5.25 to 5.30 area, given the new outlook that we have now with the acreage numbers, I think it warrants considering some hedges or making some sales on Dease corn. We think that the bean balance sheet still will be fairly tight going forward due to the drawdown in those acres. So any adjustments to yield or threat to the bean crop could still provide volatility in the new crop going forward. But nice little push here post-report on the soybeans to give producers an opportunity to hedge off and sell a lot better than where we were a week ago.
Greg Johnson, did producers take advantage?
Not really. I think they lightened up on old crop corn that they were still holding on to, but very few new crop sales were made. A few beans got made, sales were made on the rally last week after the report came out, but for the most part, very little new crop corn was sold. They may be kicking themselves, wishing they would have sold, but now that we're where we're at, we lost 93 cents last week. I think most of them are hoping for some kind of a recovery, some kind of a small bounce, as both Brian and Logan intimated that we could hopefully see a little bit of a bounce, but we need to use those bounces as selling opportunities. And so hopefully the farmers, now that we've had a little bit of rain, might take advantage of a little bit of a bounce and get some sales made.
On the old crop corn, the grain stock showing a lot of corn, or what's left that is, still in the farmers' bins. Although we're fairly short of the crop, and I think that total number, Greg, and you'll have to help me out, was below expectations. Have end users booked up enough to make it to the August or new crop September timeframe?
They're never going to tell us what their position is, but they're trying to tell us that they've got enough. They're fading the basis every week. And you have to remember, we got this crop planted early. So we will have corn, old crop corn down south, getting into the pipeline in late August instead of late September. I think we're probably 3 weeks earlier than normal. So the old crop stocks only have to hold out until the end of August, not until mid-September, as it is most years. So that's another reason to be a little bearish and to, you know, probably lighten up on old crop corn, especially if we do see this little bit of a rally here sometime soon.
And can I say with you just for a second, as it relates to the export market and just consumption in general, when you look at the total number of bushels, tons, whichever you prefer to use, on the world marketplace, thinking about second crop corn coming out of Brazil, the size of the soybean crop they harvested, is there reason to believe that there might be a shortened export window for U.S. crops to come out of the United States in the fall? And I suppose that's mostly for soybeans rather than corn.
Definitely. I think, you know, and it'll have a spillover effect on corn as well. You know, the Brazilians have proven that they want to be the low-cost provider to the world. They're going to undercut our prices. We're going to be the sellers of last resort. So if they have the crop, I think they're going to capture most of that export market. And then once they're done, then whatever balance is left or whatever residual is left comes to the U.S. So, yes, I think export numbers probably do need to be reduced in both corn and beans.
Brian Split, I'll come back to you because the WASD is due out next week. Will USDA make changes? And if you have something to add about grain stocks or the shortened export window that we've talked about, that would be fine as well.
Yeah, I think it's likely that when you look at the implications of how demand adjustments have been made over the last several months, yet the stocks came in tighter than expected, I think that implies that the USDA potentially overestimated last year's harvest. So I wouldn't be surprised at some point if they come in and reduce the yield on last year's crop from the 173, just slightly enough to make the stocks number make sense, because we know the demand just has not been there. I think looking at demand and what we've seen happen on our new crop soybean book, we really just have a problem right now where the bean sales on the books are about 3 million tons versus 13 million tons last year. And I think that's going to foreshadow what's going to come to fruition on the corn sales. Corn sales aren't as nearly as behind, but let's remember that bean crop in Brazil is ready several months before the safrinha corn crop. So with a big safrinha crop, I think that is going to have the same outcome, where world buyers are going to be going to Brazil for corn rather than to the U.S. Now, at some point, and you'd say, okay, we're 3 million tons versus 13 million tons a year ago on beans. That's really bad, and that is the case. Yet, the other end of that is, well, wow, maybe when the buying does start to kick in, there's quite a bit of buying that needs to be done. Now, the problem with that is that may be very short-lived, where China comes in and buys aggressively prior to a South American weather market. But there may only need to be several months of buying before they can go right back into the Brazilian bean harvest this winter. So I do think we will spur demand, and for corn, that demand will come, but at the expense of price. I think it's going to be prices in low to mid fours on the board is going to be the thing that brings in additional demand and wakes up these international buyers.
Logan Kimmel, do you have anything to add about the export market or consumption here in the United States for corn or soybeans?
Yeah, I think those are very good points, how stinky the demand has been, and seeing the cuts that are needing to be made on those exports. One other thing to just consider and look at, though, with midday today with the ethanol numbers, that did show some strong usage. So there is a little light in regards to the demand side here with the jump in margins too this week on ethanol. But overall, it's a concern. And I think the carrying higher prices, I think we'll see the demand pick up, but it might be in that mid to low four range on the corn market before we really see that ramp up.
I would say this, that I did see this week, and frankly, I don't remember where this came from, but it made some sense to me, that the problem, part and parcel of the problem in the U.S., and I won't ask you to comment on this, with the export market is that both the Trump and the Biden administrations have used agriculture as a tool in their diplomacy. And that has made, as many times has been warned, the United States not such a reliable source in the same time frame as which Brazil has managed to develop not only second crop corn that is exportable, but a third crop, which has yet to be put in the ground. It'll be harvested in August. It's probably, well, I guess it may be going in the ground here pretty shortly. Something to keep in the back of your mind. And I'll turn to you then, Greg Johnson, about domestic consumption in the United States. The ethanol market, which Logan just mentioned, those numbers got a little better this week. And we know what the RVOs are under the RFS now, a 15 and a quarter for 23 and 15 billion and 15 billion for 24 and 25. And then the need to ship grain to the West to feed livestock. But I'm wondering about how much livestock there is. What do we know about the consumption domestically?
Yeah. Let's start with ethanol. If you go back several years, ethanol usage, corn bushels have been about 5.3 billion bushels, and that doesn't change. You know, that's due to the mandate. That's how much we produce, and I don't think that's going to change. I think you can pretty well pencil in 5.3 billion bushels of corn usage for ethanol. So that leaves exports, which we talked about being not so good, and probably the USDA will have to lower that at some point in time. So then we go to livestock, and you've got the fewest amount of cattle on feed since 1962. Hog numbers are not robust. Chickens are okay, but without beef, it's hard to think that there's anything friendly that's going to come out of the livestock numbers. So, you know, you're looking at a 2.2 billion bushel carryout as of June, And now with an extra 2 million acres, if they don't change the yield, you're looking at a 2.6 billion bushel carryout. Hopefully the government will lower the yield. Whether they do that in the July report or not, I don't know. History would say probably not. If you look at the drought monitor, you would say maybe there's enough evidence for the USDA to start lowering the yield in this July report. So, maybe we can get the carryout down to, depending on how many bushels you take off the yield, get it down to 2.0, 2.1. But still, a 2 billion bushel carryout is not friendly. And I think, as Brian said early in this interview, any rallies probably need to be met with selling, because we're probably still looking at lower prices. We, with 2013, we went down to that, 445, 450 level. And I unfortunately hate to think this way, but I think that that's still entirely possible if we get rains and we have a decent corn crop and the demand doesn't pick up.
Well, let's switch to soybeans and see if there's something better there that we can talk about, Brian. In the supply and demand tables next week, if nothing has changed, I want to say that USDA would drop 139 million bushels left by the fall of 2024, or ending stocks. That's a really small number. And if you were to take, a bushel or a bushel and a half off or something like that, it would be even smaller, and that 113 or 14, I think, possibly. Is there something in the soybeans that writes a better picture for price?
Well, you just discussed a lot of the things that are going to be friendly. We're going to be dealing with, near pipeline perceptions of soybean carryout. But when I think ahead to how the yield could potentially play out, I'm a little bit more friendly. The bean potential for trend line or possibly above trend yield versus the potential for corn to raise that type of a crop. I think we've already done damage on the corn crop, and we've definitely seen some improvement with some of the rain events that have happened over the last week and a half, 2 weeks. But I'm not an agronomist, but I've been told by many of my clients that the bean crop does like to be stressed early in the growing season. And if we can have a good July growing season and into August, get some timely rains, avoid the severe heat, I think the bean crop has a much higher potential of having trend to above yields. Now, the other thing that we have to be mindful of in the big picture, and we were talking about this months ago in kind of the trade rhetoric, was that Brazil is going to be planting even more acres this upcoming fall, which is leading into their spring into summer. And so when we're thinking of 150 plus million ton crop in Brazil this year for soybeans, next year we could be scraping already above 160 million tons with those extra acres, assuming that we have reasonable weather patterns and good yields. So I do think that there could be some good friendliness to the bean market here short term because of that reduction in acres. That was a rather severe reduction. It was rather unexpected. We did rally well off the lows going into that number. We've really been unable to maintain any further momentum after that report. We came out of the weekend, we saw some additional buying, but they were very quick to sell that. So I think you still have to be mindful of how the weather pans out here over the next 6 to 8 weeks. And I do think good weather will bring the bean market back down to some lower levels moving forward. And a lot of this is going to depend on whether or not we get China to come in and start buying. We've seen previous years where China will come in maybe mid to late August and buy as we are typically trying to make our early harvest lows. But again, I don't know that they will be buying quite as long as they may typically buy, because we are going to be running into that Brazilian crop several months later.
Yeah, so we were at 87.5 million acres going into the reports last Friday, Logan Kimmel. They dropped 4 million acres from that, USDA did, so it's now 83.5 million, a much smaller number. Are you of a mind, is Roach Ag Marketing of a mind, that there could be a really big crop still, or good size crop, given the number of acres that we'll be harvesting?
Yeah, I think that kicks into the weather going forward. And I agree that you've probably seen more damage done thus far to the corn, not so much on the beans. If we get timely rains and we see the temperatures remain a little cooler going forward, then I think you could be right in line with the trend line yield. Any stress or hot and dry pockets going into August, that could provide volatility. Keeping in mind, though, that the world supplies aren't necessarily that tight on the soybeans where they might be here. I think that's what's maybe cooled off the market short term after Friday's big move, with also kind of a little reversal there on Monday with that spike up just shy of 14. And we've come well off that down to this 200-day moving average. So I think it's going to be closely watched. I think there's still potential for big yields on the beans just due to the later part of the growing season. And just keeping in the back of our mind on the world supplies not being very tight.
Hey, Greg, now that you're part of TGM, how has, when you were part of the Andersons, you mostly fed the Southeast and the livestock sector there, both poultry and pork farms. But I think that's changed with TGM. Where does the grain head from your elevator these days?
Well, since the last year and a half, and even the last half year when we were still the Andersons, our market really changed from the Southeast feeder market. It was to the Gulf and for export because we've had China show up to buy corn the last couple of years. And so ever since we've been TGM, the best markets that we've had has been the export market. But that seems to be coming to an end. China seems to be buying from South America right now because they're the cheaper market. And so now the better bids are either Southwest feeders or Southeast feeder markets. So it's not so much a change in company, I think, as it was just a change in China needed to buy corn and soybeans, and they bought a lot of it out of the Gulf. And that dictated where our grain went. Where it will go this fall and beyond kind of depends on China, not so much as who's making the decision, because we'll sell it wherever the best market is. And the last year and a half, 2 years, that's been the Gulf market.
Well, I want to ask all three of you, and I guess I'll start with you, Greg. Do you think the U.S. marketplace will change the percentages of grain? And this could just be a change in the export market, so that we are more domestically faced than we have been in the last 15 years? And I guess I'm asking about going forward. And Greg, we'll start with you.
Unfortunately, I think you're right. I think we are seeing a shift. I think Brazil has basically committed to becoming a supplier to the world, whereas we are more committed to, producing what we need here domestically and not worried so much about capturing our export market share as we did back in the 70s and 80s. So, I think we're seeing a shift away. Now, that could change. I mean, we could have weather problems down in South America, and that market could come back to us. But it feels to me like we're kind of more the seller of last resort. And if there's problems in other areas of the world, then that demand comes back to us. But I'm not sure that we're willing to underprice everybody and undersell everybody to reclaim that market share.
Yeah, you know, I think the writing was on the wall years ago when we saw China invest a significant amount of money in Brazilian infrastructure in helping them not only grow more product, but also make it easier for them to get that product to port. And now when you look at the domestic initiatives, especially as it relates to soybeans, it's all about additional crush plants to support the renewable diesel initiatives. And so, part of the thing that we're going to be looking at is a lot more demand because of that for soybean oil. But that's going to generate a problem where if we're crushing all of these beans to make the oil, how does that leave us with all the additional meal that will also be the other byproduct of crush? So we're going to have to start stimulating some additional demand sources for meal. We saw, actually a transaction that was interesting maybe about a month ago, which was when we sent soybeans to Spain. So it showed up on our export business that beans were exported to Spain. And really what that was is we sent beans to Spain so that they could crush them, send us the oil back, and leave the meal there so that we don't have the meal continue to build up domestically. So I think there's going to be some new trains of thought and some new ways to arbitrage some of the international opportunities. But it does seem that specifically, at least for the soybeans, that we are going to be losing more and more of the international market share to Brazil moving forward.
Well, I definitely think that's appearing to be the trend and valid points. And I just kind of think back for the last 2 years of the amount of times the threat of geopolitical risk involving countries like China and Taiwan and how that could affect and be a threat to our export business or shut off with them if things progress. And it's been fairly quiet on that front, but we've seen how that threat or geopolitical risk can affect our prices if things escalate. And I think that ties into the trend we're going in regards to exports versus domestic usage.
So, Greg, think through this with me for just a bit on corn, and we can add soybeans into the mix because I have some questions on that as well. But within the corn complex, we have domestically feed and ethanol markets, which right now make up about a third, I think, 33% of total production is used in those two areas. So that's 66% or 67 or maybe 70. And then we will have 10 to 15% left and the other 10% has been exported. We're going to either have to raise fewer acres of corn, which doesn't appear, certainly that's not going to be the case this year, or we have to stimulate some other areas. Ethanol, I'm going to say, because that's built into the legislative process, capped out at $15 billion. It doesn't seem like it's going to get larger than that. I'm wondering if domestically we would have reason, and I suppose this would be an export market for beef or pork or chicken, to be able to feed more animals here and export them.
Yeah, that's the missing link right there is the feed demand sector. We're feeding the fewest number of cattle since 62. That number has to go up. I mean, cattle prices are high, you know, and that's discouraging demand in the supermarket. If we could grow more beef, the prices would come down. We could use more, and that would stimulate demand for corn. So, when you're looking at exports and ethanol, those good luck trying to get those numbers raised on your own. I think the best avenue is to try to increase that feed demand sector, and that seems to be the easiest way to go. But for whatever reason, we have not seen an increase in feed demand here the last couple of years.
And then, Brian, as we flip that into the soybeans and think about how many acres of those have to be available, we've got two things that are running. You pointed towards both of them already. There are many plants being built out for renewable diesel, and that does increase the amount of bean meal that will be available. And you don't really hear about the potential to export that very much, simply because we don't have the logistics or the infrastructure to do it at this point. Does there need to be a push to create infrastructure to manage this renewable diesel increase that many are hoping for?
Yeah, I think we alluded to that in the previous question, that there needs to be some kind of effort to find a new demand base for soy meal, you know, and that's going to be competing with Argentina. And we talked about Argentina quite a bit over the winter because of their drought. And, you know, everybody's talking about, oh, well, Argentina exports 40% of the world's meal. And so it's going to be something we're going to have to find a way to compete with Argentina if we want to become an exporter of meal. And so there's going to have to be some changes to our infrastructure to allow us to do that more with less effort. And I actually want to go back to your question to Greg for a second, because, you know, he's absolutely right about that feed demand. And just to quickly point out, our placements in May were larger than expected, and I think a lot of that was because for a period of time we had price of December corn below $5 a bushel. I would suspect that maybe the June placements won't be quite as exciting, because we did have that run up to over $6. But I would say that maybe our placements in July and moving forward, especially if we continue to see $5 or lower on the board, that should spur some additional placements. And that is what is first needed to happen in order to get our feed demand back on track. But back to the meal, something needs to be done if we're going to have this initiative to have all of this oil so we can meet our renewable diesel initiatives. We got to find a way to use that meal. And by the way, all that extra meal until we do that is going to be competing with DDGs, and it's going to be competing with corn.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. Logan Kimmel from Roach Ag Marketing, we'll begin with you today.
Well, I think as we look at these markets post-USDA report, we're still in a time frame where we're going to have an important 3 to 6 weeks of weather and provide wide swings in volatility. I think producers need to consider on up moves in the market on new crop corn and beans to increase sales, get hedges on the books, use opportunities, and also consider looking at to 2024 levels, especially on the soybeans, and start considering that. I think we'll still have good markets to trade with the huge pendulum swing in these acres. And I think that'll provide opportunities going forward. But we just have to keep in the back of our mind the potential of large carryout numbers on the corn market. And that's where, if we do get rallies and opportunities, I think it's prudent, if your crop's looking a little bit better, to start considering locking in levels.
Greg Johnson from TGM.
Well, December corn futures closed at 5:06 on Thursday. The 85% of a crop insurance policy, we were 591 in February, works out to 502. So there's not much incentive for farmers to sell corn at this point, because anything lower than this, and the insurance will kick in on an average size crop. However, if we do rally a little bit over the next month or so, farmers need to take advantage of that, because it sure looks like we're going to have plenty of corn, and 2 billion plus carryout doesn't equate to high prices. We probably need to have a 4 in front of the price this fall. Soybeans, on the other hand, closed at 1340. 85% policy is 1170. So there's a lot of downside in soybeans before your insurance kicks in. So even though the numbers are tight, and I'm probably a little bit more friendly beans in the short run, we don't want to completely ignore the market. We probably want to make sure we sell beans probably at the same time we're selling corn on any rallies we see this summer.
And Brian Split of AgMarket.net, your final word for the day.
Yeah, those are very good points when you think about where our crop insurance kicks in. And so the distance between current values versus crop insurance and soybeans, there's a large gap there, and I think that warrants getting more work done there. The other thing that we've been talking about internally is the idea that because of the storage that we have, and we're likely to see producers want to store corn. There's carry in the corn market, which we haven't seen for numerous years. So if you have hedges that are priced off of December, start looking at the spreads between decent March, decent May, decent July. Start thinking about rolling some of those out to lock in carry as the futures market goes lower. But if that is the case, there may be quite a bit of beans that are sold out of the field for income. The cost of money is high, so sales that are done out of the field are likely to be a little bit more aggressive than previous years. And that may be a big impact on fall soybean basis. So if you've got the wherewithal to track your basis, it might be something to keep in mind, where you don't want to be spot selling beans out of the field and accepting the basis levels that are offered to you at that time, because they may not be that advantageous to you.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find and listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week. They include Logan Kimmel from Roach Ag Marketing out of Naperville, Illinois, Greg Johnson at TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing here in Champaign County, Illinois, and Brian Split from AgMarket.net out of Barrington, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.